Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
How do you know where he's going to be 2 seconds from now, sir?
You don't throw the ball where the receiver is. You throw where he's going to be.
Lead him by a crosshair. One Minnesota, two Minnesota.
Isn't it supposed to be Mississippi, sir?
I'm from St. Paul. Lead him by another half.
We are cleared hot.
Master, arm on. Weapons hot. 3, 2, 1.
This episode of Radio Motherboard contains spoilers for Good Kill, a new movie about drone warfare. If you haven't seen the movie and care about such things, please come back next week. The movie has its problems, which we definitely get into, but overall it's worth seeing for being the first mainstream movie to take a look at the psychological toll drone pilots face and the overall weirdness of fighting a war from half a world away. Hey, welcome back to Radio Motherboard. I'm staff writer Jason Kebler, and I'm joined today with our supervising producer, Chris O'Coin.
Yo!
And our editor-at-large, Alex Pasternak.
Hey there.
And today we are going to be talking about drones and drone warfare and how they're portrayed in popular culture. Alex just spoke with Ethan Hawke and
Andrew Niccol, the director of Good Kill, which is a new movie. It's about to come out. It tells the story of a drone pilot who operates a drone from Las Vegas, where in real life, drones are flown from, and it sort of documents the life of a person who's killing people who are thousands of miles away on a screen, and it's in many ways the first film to do that, first Hollywood film that I've seen that talks about this issue.
Right. He basically goes to work every day, sits in a trailer for 12 hours, stares at a screen, follows orders, kills people, and then goes home to his wife and kids. And in that sense, it's very much like all these other military PTSD type movies where, he has two kids, he has a wife, he's an alcoholic, and he's kind of driven to do this stuff because he's forced to do things he doesn't want to, which in this case is kill people who he thinks maybe don't deserve it. You know, he like attacks a picnic or a funeral and that sort of thing. So it's a very heavy-handed movie, I'd say, Alex.
Yeah, he spends a lot of time sitting in front of a computer screen, which adds to the sense of tedium that I think is part of flying a drone. But there's also a lot of talk in the cockpit, this container essentially that is mobile and from which drone pilots operate these things. Pilots basically in the film are talking about their kills and discussing the moral implications, which makes the film kind of feel like in some parts like a lecture about the morality around drones. Of course, maybe reflects reality, which is to say there's not a whole lot of action for these people. They're basically just sitting there playing what looks like a video game.
Right. And I think it's an important movie in that sense because it does tell that very real story. Last fall, I went out to Grand Forks Air Force Base in North Dakota, where they fly Reaper drones, which they're not armed, but they're the surveillance drones that fly all over the Middle East. And I spoke to some of these drone pilots, and they're all children. They're all like 19, 20, 21. And they do this every day. They go sit in a trailer. They fly for 12 hours. They don't know where they're going to fly until someone tells them where they're going to fly. And then they go home and they go to Outback Steakhouse and they are amongst regular people. They go to Walmart and like people are jerks to them in the parking lot. And then they go home and are expected to be normal. And that's very much what this movie is about. It's about what happens when you go to war every single day and then you go back to like your regular life.
Mm-hmm. Did they seem normal to you?
Well, I interviewed them on an Air Force base, like standing in front of one of their drones, which this drone is huge. Like, it's not the size of a 747, but it's maybe like half that size, and it takes up this massive hangar. And I kind of asked them, I was like, when you fly this, do you worry about, you know, crashing it because it feels like a video game, it doesn't matter? And they're like, it's drilled into our heads that this is a very, very expensive piece of equipment. And, you know, the people on the ground that they're supporting are in a really dangerous situation often because this is generally used for like ground support. So there are like troops on the ground, like looking for IDs and things of that nature.
Right.
So they say it feels very real to them and not like a video game, but they all the best pilots loved video games growing up, and all the best pilots said that playing video games was helpful for this, but they think that it's kind of different.
Do they still play video games? Do you know?
I didn't get a chance to ask them that, unfortunately.
I think everybody in the military plays Call of Duty.
Yeah,
is that a generalization? True. It seems like it's true based on.
I think it might be
a
requirement.
My friends that are veterans, I mean, have just said that like that's what they did like during their tours. But my question was, do you think it's just part of what's being drilled into their head by the top military brass? That's like, do not tell people that it feels like a video game. Like, tell people that that you need to respect the equipment. But how could you not?
Yeah,
this is my question.
So I spoke to Ethan Hawke and the director, Andrew Niccol, and they did some interviews with drone pilots when they were researching the film, and said essentially that, you know, these pilots do describe it like a video game. But at the same time, they recognize that they do help soldiers on the ground when they need air support. And I think even... I think Ethan Hawke said that, you know, drones have ended up saving a lot of lives because of the precision, quote unquote, precision of their weapons. I think one thing that concerns me is sort of the dissonance within the brains of drone pilots between sort of seeing something on a screen and knowing at the same time that you're looking at reality. That on one level it does feel like a video game. On another level, you know that this is real. And how do you sort of balance those two things in your head? And then how do you deal with the implications afterwards? I think that's kind of like a new mental state that military personnel haven't really encountered before. PTSD, a lot of the time, seems to be about fear. It seems to be about being attacked. In these cases, these pilots aren't being attacked at all. They're like basically invisible to the enemy.
Right. And that's why I think that this film is important, even if it's not particularly good. And it's not really a fun watch. And it doesn't.
You didn't like it.
I didn't like it very much. It's overly long. You said it feels like a lecture. And I mean, at the end of the day, this is a Hollywood. It's like kind of a indie budget film, but it's also a Hollywood production starring Ethan Hawke, and it's not very entertaining, and it's very heavy-handed.
I think it has a lot of work to do as a movie because it's trying to describe a story that up until now hasn't been told in Hollywood movies, and I think for many people is a story that remains obscure. That is to say, like, how these drones work, what happens behind the scenes, what they're doing. So I think that, you know, deciding to make the movie was like a huge risk. I think it's probably a worthy venture just given the discussion that it might might encourage. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it was a bit tedious, and there was a lot of moralizing. I thought also I had questions about accuracy too. I don't know what impression was.
What didn't ring true for you? Because there was certainly a few things that were like, I don't know, I'm not sure if I buy this. Judging from the reporting I've done on this subject, not from like the, oh, I don't think this could possibly be true.
I'm going to throw in a spoiler alert here too, maybe. Is that accurate?
I mean, this whole thing has spoilers in it. I should have said that earlier, but we never really do spoiler alerts on this podcast, so sorry. Anyways.
People do die from drone strikes in this movie. It's true.
Yes.
That's a bold decision from the filmmakers.
I know. Another bold decision, and one that I think, you know, relates to the question of accuracy, is a lot of the shots are shots from above of towns in Pakistan, presumably, or Afghanistan. And the quality of the video is so good. You know, like Jason said, like you report on this stuff, and your sense of what actually happens behind the scenes is a little obscured because it's secret. But my sense is that like the video quality that drone pilots have isn't that good. And in the movie, it's really good. Like it's super high quality video that they're looking at while they're watching these people from 20,000 feet. I asked the director about it. He said that it was accurate and that they actually had to make it look a little less realistic in order to... They had to make the video look a little less high definition in order to make it look more real.
I guess my question is, and I remember you telling me about this after you had the conversation with him, and we go through a lot of drone footage for the documentaries we produce, but the bulk of it is from like a few years ago,
right?
And the quality is always shitty, and it's also redacted in various places. There's bars over like anything that like would show you the geolocation of the drone.
Sure.
So when I saw the trailer, I called bullshit too, because I was like, drone cameras do not look like that. Like they do, they're not that stable. They're not, the resolution is nowhere near that. And then I thought, you told me that, and I was like, oh, well, maybe that's true. Maybe the cameras have gotten better. Cameras in general have certainly improved in the last few years, like since the closing days of like the Iraq War and stuff like that. But then all the recent drone footage I've seen that the DOD puts out is strikes on ISIS, and it's just as bad.
Right.
So
it makes you wonder.
Well, the real problem with that is, if that's the case, if drone footage does look that shitty, it's one, just like an aesthetic match. Like it's annoying that it looks so much different. But what's really problematic about that is that they're putting that out into the universe. And I've been made like very aware of how people see shit like that, and they go like, that's what those are. Mm-hmm. Like that's what drones can see. And so they form all their political opinions and stuff based on
misconceptions,
movies. Yeah. And it's like we were talking about before we started rolling in the new Fast and the Furious movie, which I saw last night and is fantastic because it doesn't care how stupid it is. There's a drone in it that has rocket engines and is at least semi-autonomous, which sort of doesn't exist yet, as we've covered in the past, and has a Gatling gun on it and an unlimited supply of missiles.
It's launched from a helicopter as well. Also, I need to cut in right here and correct something from earlier. I'm like kicking myself right now, but I said I met with some Reaper pilots, which is just a different name for the Predator. I didn't meet with Reaper pilots, I met with Global Hawk pilots, which is, before someone calls me out, I just want to say that's who I met.
Attention
with.
To detail.
No,
I was going to ask because you said it was huge, and the Global Hawk is that giant surveillance, right?
Yeah, it's a surveillance one, and it has a bunch of like airtime records. Like these can stay up in the air for like 24 hours or longer in some cases.
We are really huge drone nerds.
Yeah.
Well, you got to cover it. You're going to,
of course,
know right. It.
But I think it relates again to the question of how do you make a movie that is true to life about a project that is, for all intents and purposes, hidden from the public, that is secret. I mean, again, it's like the central challenge that these filmmakers had was to do that. And it's also a big, you know, it's obviously a pretty big political challenge. And as the director told me, this movie from the beginning was never going to be financed in dollars. It was financed in euros. because getting a movie made like this in America isn't so easy.
Should we pause here and cut to that conversation? Let's just kind of hear from Ethan Hawke and the director to see, you know, Alex did a very nice interview with them. So let's cut to that. Radio Motherboard is brought to you by Casper. It's one perfect mattress made in the USA with free shipping, free returns, and 100 nights to try it in your own home. It's a radical new idea. Actually sleep on a mattress to decide if you love it. Check it out at casper.com. You can use code VICE for $50 off any new mattress.
How did you decide to make this movie to begin with? Like, what was the moment where you said, this has to be a film?
There wasn't a moment, there were moments. Mm-hmm. You know, it was sort of a culmination. I'd see, you know, like see reports in the media, drone strike, drone strike, drone strike. And you see a big crater in the ground. I always wondered, how does that happen? Who the hell is pushing the button? Where are they? And when you find out that one of them, you know, major bases is outside Las Vegas, then it's more fascinating. Then you find out that there are characters like Ethan's character who do this. They were ex-fighter pilots. They were dragged out of their cockpit, stuck in a box, and they do this 12 hours a day and then go and pick up the kids from soccer. And what is it doing to guys like that? And it's we can't really predict because it's a very new type of warfare, and so there's so many ramifications that go on with this character, that he's going to war at home. Mm-hmm. And he's got in his mind that he is this, you know, fighter jock, but he's stuck in a box, he's in an armchair, you know, and so he feels like a coward picking off these guys, and so there's all of that. And then they were going to, you know, they're going to issue a medal for drone pilots, and they announced it, and there was a huge outcry. People said, no, medals are for valor and courage, and they rescinded it. Mm-hmm. And so how did that make his character feel? Okay, well, we're going to get a medal. No, we're not going to get a medal. You know, we're worthless, you know, it's so, mm-hmm. you know, or worthless.
So on one side, you've got, for a character like yours, Ethan, this crisis of morality and responsibility, but on the other side, this question of valor and courage. You know, you're doing something that is really morally questionable, maybe. And at the other hand, maybe you're a second tier citizen within the military because you're not doing the flying that you used to do. What was it? I mean, what was it like? And I was learning about this kind of character.
Well, I found that. One of the most interesting aspects of the character is that not that he's having these kind of moral crisis about the war in general or something like that. He's grieving for the Air Force. I mean, he's grieving for aviation. He's grieving for his identity and his self-worth. It's difficult to fly an F-16. You know, it's extremely, you have a lot of pride if you can do that well, you know, mm-hmm. and a lot of self-respect. And when that gets taken away and you're watching the whole thing you dedicated your life for stop, it's the equivalent of being told, well, actually, we're going to do, you know, movies can start. You know, I've often thought about this. What would happen when, soon it'll happen that there'll be a new movie starring Steve McQueen, right? The computer will generate a new Steve McQueen performance, a new Marilyn Monroe performance, and there'll just be less and less parts for, you know, schmucks like me. And how will that feel? And
I think it'll be more parts for you.
Yeah, you think so.
You know, but you don't have to leave the house.
Yeah. Well, they can mock it up themselves. But it's interesting kind of depression that unfolds, because even if, let's say, you don't like the ethics of one particular soldier or whatever, there's always, when you have the courage of your own convictions, when you're willing to put your life on the line for your beliefs, when you put your money where your mouth is, there's a certain dignity in that no matter what you're doing, it's some kind of something admirable in that. And what guys like Major Tommy Egan are getting robbed of that. And as a performer, that's extremely interesting thing, because this is a new place a soldier is finding themselves.
How did you research that? How did you learn about that state of mind?
Oh, Andrew is really my primary tool. You know, he, his writing is so meticulous and so good that acting is easy when the DNA of the character is in place. It's very difficult when the DNA is off and you're trying to navigate that. But Andrew's very good about that, and he brought in drone pilots for us to meet and talk to, and so we could feel authentic in that way, and that the, so hopefully the movie would smell authentic. I mean, it was fascinating, the first movie we did together. Gattaca was such a design-heavy movie. I mean, you know, we had this amazing production designer, and there was all this work went into the design, and with this, it was like no design. It's all we had to do.
That was the design philosophy, actually.
Yeah.
No design. We had to look exactly the way the military have it.
And that's interesting enough. You know, that's, it's so dystopian. It, 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 if you were to show this movie to somebody 10 years ago, it would feel like Philip K. Dick wrote it. You know? And yet here we are, it's a period piece.
And people are actually living in it. And what is the state of mind of these people? I mean, just based on what you've heard from them.
I love the thing people love, that people love to think about like a video game war, and I remember asking guys, so is it like a video game? And he had this kind of look in his eyes. It's like the most boring video game in the history of the world. It's like, imagine waiting, playing a game 7 months before something happened for 40 seconds, and you need to write a 40-page report about that 7 seconds. And he's like, it's just, and it's very strange. It is like a video game. It's just the most boring one ever.
And you're waiting for a lot of time, and you're watching.
A lot of watching.
Yeah. And also you're kind of somehow falling in love with the people who are your targets.
The guy, how could you not?
The guy who, you know, you're targeting, you know, you call him a bad guy, but he might be a good dad. You know, you see him playing soccer with his kid. You're waiting for just the right moment or the right order to take him out. But you're actually sort of learning a lot about him.
Right. Did you, go for it.
You get to meet his wife and see his family and see the dynamic in the house and all this. And which is very different than what my grandfather was asked to do, which is to fly over Germany and drop some bombs and try to get out before they shoot you down.
Right.
You know?
And there's no one even shooting at this drone. They can't see it.
Right. A completely bizarre mental state that must put you in.
I love this. I mean, I don't love it, but it's a fascinating thing to think about, that kids over there have started to hate blue skies. You know, they like to play in cloudy weather because there's no fear of the drones.
Right. Yeah, it's blue skies, perfect conditions for drones. So you wake up, you see a cloudy day, you say, great. I mean, that's, you know, blue sky, oh, shit.
Right. Did you think about doing stuff on the ground? Was any, I mean, so much of the movie is from
No, I made a decision very early on that I would only stay true to, you know,
the observation of the pilots.
Yeah, the God's eye point of view that he had.
Right.
And then I carried it even through to Vegas, where I continued that motif and put a God's eye point of view on Tommy Egan.
Yeah, no, so, I love that.
Yeah, so it's...
Those are great shots. What has been the reaction so far from people who know this program from the inside? I mean, I don't know if they've seen it.
They haven't had a chance to react.
Okay.
I'm not sure there'll ever be an official reaction.
What are you hoping that they will get out of it, or what are you hoping
I hope that everybody just starts to talk about it, and that sort of opens some sort of, you know, discussion and provokes some thought about what's being done in our name.
Most of us don't have the tools or the vocabulary to know much about this.
Right.
You know, so it's one of the great values that movies or art or anything can do is to ask these questions. It's not the responsibility of the movie to have an answer. In fact, I'm kind of allergic to movies that claim to have an answer.
You must love my movies then.
Yeah. I do. I keep being in them. The questions are so interesting, and the questions are what are important for the community, the larger community, to think about. And without stories, we don't really have any, we can't feel it. We can't have it. It can't become tactile to us.
Right.
We don't become intimate with it. You know, you can see a picture of a predator and go, oh, interesting. But, you know, I mean, I don't think a lot of people think Andrew's making up the fact that they're flown from Vegas, you know. I mean,
right. It is interesting. There's all these issues that come up. I mean, torture is one of them. Surveillance is another one.
That's one of the strange Orwellian things about the advantage of the drones is it's kind of ended the torture debate, right? Because we don't take anybody prisoner. Right. We can just kill them.
Right. It's frictionless.
Yeah.
But it has opened up the assassination debate.
Well,
although it's not called assassination. It's
targeted killing.
Yeah.
I mean, the debate is hard because it seems like these are topics that we know about, and thanks to WikiLeaks, right, and mm-hmm. was a source for you here.
Sure. I mean, I modeled all of my drone strikes on what was disseminated by WikiLeaks.
Huh.
Because that's the only way to see it.
Right. And also from people who were in the program.
They could authenticate it, but, you know, there's nothing that quite like seeing the video.
These are just conversations that these are topics that we know about, but they're hard to talk about, and we don't want to think about them or talk about them.
They're very difficult to talk about. I mean, you know, the left doesn't like it, the right doesn't like it. I remember when you were first cutting the movie, I called you once, so we were on the phone, and I said, "How is it?" And you said, "It's a little bit like a desert rose. It's beautiful, but it's hard to touch." You know, I mean, it's
like a cactus. You know what I mean? You might love it, but you can't hug it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard. What was the? Did you get a sense from the people that you spoke to, and maybe from your own experiences, that there is a value to this program?
I think it's undeniable. I think it's undeniable. I mean, it's the same. It's not radically different from the dialogue around Gattaca and genetic engineering. I mean, if you can save a child, you know, elephantitis, and you can fix somebody's spine, and you can, I mean, there's amazing things from genetic engineering. There's also huge ethical questions that are brought up. And the surveillance possibilities of the drones, the ability for wounded warriors to participate, for people to really, the idea that, you know, troops on the ground need no fear of ambush with the drone following them. Mm-hmm. You can send unmanned aircraft to places that you could never go. Mm-hmm. It's undeniably, if you want to talk about collateral damage, it's the best weapon we've ever had. I mean, compared to Dresden or the bombing of Cambodia. Mm-hmm. But it does, when it makes killing... And when it makes warfare so cheap and so easy, and that's the only thing that ever stopped any war is body bags coming home or the expense being too much, and the drones make it incredibly cheap and no body bags come home. Mm-hmm. So it begins this question of whether or not you're creating a kind of Orwellian possibility of perpetual warfare. Because all we're doing is kind of shooting off the heads of the dandelions, but are we actually killing the weeds? Are we winning this war by doing that? I mean, these are the larger questions.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
And it's like all technology, you know. It's to say I'm anti-drone would be to say I'm anti-the internet. You know, mm-hmm. It's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And this is just being developed more and more. It's just a technology. Really, all we're trying to decide, I'm not trying to decide it, but what should...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Be decided is, are we doing it responsibly?
Mm-hmm.
Is this technology being used wisely?
Mm-hmm. And what are the ethics when you can just pick anybody off over the world? I mean, it's what will happen when everyone has a drone? We've just opened a whole new box.
Sure.
And also, I from your character's point of view, you know, they were issuing a medal. They're going to issue a medal for drone pilots, and they had to rescind it because there was such an outcry.
Right, a question over valor.
Right, exactly.
And then where are the Chuck Yeagers of the future, and what's the role for them? Mm-hmm. You know, for that great... I mean, the great hero in the American psyche, the pilot, the freedom that represents, the agency that... I mean, it's interesting thing about the movie, the last kill of the film is... Mm-hmm. is one that he's gone rogue and stuff, but it's a human being searching desperately for some sense of agency, some sense of, I want to to feel myself, I want to not be a machine. And it's not like he finds any ethical high ground, he kind of loses his mind, but he's struggling to be himself.
Yeah, it's a very difficult ending.
Very difficult ending.
Yeah, because it leaves your character in a new realm of ambiguity. But do you feel like this in some ways is a parable for the way that we live with technology in general now, through screens and living virtually, interacting with people virtually?
Not consciously, but yeah. I guess you definitely say it.
I wouldn't have said that necessarily while we're making it, but watching it last night we were at the Tribeca Film Festival, we walked out to do a Q&A, and I would say somewhere between 70% and 80% of the audience were filming the Q&A. So we walked out on stage and everybody had their phones over their face, they're filming this thing, and I'm just thinking, well, hey, when are you guys going to watch this? Like, why? But so nobody's actually even here. Like, why didn't we just do this at, I could have done this at home and you could watch it on your phone and we could stream it. I mean, it's strange in a strange way.
It's just a symptom, I think, this program.
It's a larger question of where we are and how we're detaching from intimacy on all levels and in what way we're seeding our humanity at all levels.
And stop me if I told you this already, but, young drone pilots, they would go home and play video games. And it's impossible to separate yourself.
Right, right. And the military uses video games for training, obviously.
Right, and that
as well they should.
And they use the PlayStation. They based the machinery on PlayStation.
Right.
Because it works. It's good.
It's great. It's very tactile. Perfect.
Totally. Yeah, we just made a documentary about bomb technicians in the military, and they literally use Xbox controllers to control their robots.
Why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
They're effective.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been developing these things. What's best?
I was reading about one drone pilot who's been in the media, and I guess there was a GQ piece, Brandon Bryant.
Right? Yes.
And he talks about
I've
this.
I've spoken to him.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that struck me was there's one of the solutions the Air Force has proposed to dealing with the PTSD that comes about through this is using Siri-like technology, whereby the pilot is able to offload the decision-making to a computer and say, Siri, fire the missile, and so forth. I don't know if you've heard of...
No, I haven't heard of that, but I've heard of something similar where some of these kids who are, recruited in shopping malls and just basically they're gamers and they don't have any military rank, so what they can do is they can fly a drone over its target, laser the target, but the one thing they cannot do because they have no official military rank is push the button.
Right.
So then a military officer comes over and pushes the button.
Wow. Are there things that are happening in the military to deal with the kind of problems that your character experiences?
Well, it's an interesting question, but this is what the military is constantly facing, which is that everything's always new. There's always a new set of problems, as soon as...
And also for your character, there's shame.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to show up and say, I've got PTSD.
Oh my God, no.
I mean, your average Marine would say, what the hell are you?
Get out of here.
You're sitting in an armchair.
Right.
You don't even know about PTSD.
Yeah, and so...
Because it kind of needs its own word. It's some
its
other
own category,
problem.
Yeah.
It's some...
Yeah,
you know,
because it's not a feeling of fear. It's a feeling of what moral responsibility.
Well,
is.
It's an interesting question actually, because there are different feelings. But when you look at the history of warfare, it seems that mankind has often, surprisingly, had a much more difficult time shooting another person than being shot at. That you've heard me talk about this before, but it's a very interesting thing about, like, in the Civil War when they would clean up after the battlefield, these guys, they would, as they clean up the dead, oftentimes they'd find their rifles loaded 17, 22, 27 times, meaning a guy would stand on the front line, he didn't want to run, right, but he didn't want to kill anybody because he could see them, and he'd just stand there and load his rifle until he was shot. Or when the constant refrain heard from the commanding officers was shoot straight, because most of these guys would shoot at the ground or shoot over, because there's some thing in us compelling us towards not hurting others, you know, and that has to be over, you know, you have to override that instinct through military training.
Right.
And a lot of those Civil War guys didn't, they really didn't have proper training.
Right.
And so there was a tremendous amount of PTSD after that because these guys, their minds weren't ready for it. And I know that a lot of these young guys who are over in Baghdad and stuff like that who are coming home, well, these guys are 19 years old. You know, you wouldn't give them the keys to back your car out of your driveway, you know, and they're driving Humvees,
right.
You know, through the middle of town. And it's very, my point being is that how to define PTSD is really interesting, or it's changing anyway, because these drone pilots are doing the hard part from the human point of view. The human point of view of just taking shots, shooting at people, killing them. And they're being robbed of the part where the integrity comes from, which is putting yourself in harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
So even though a lot of soldiers look down on the drone pilots, what they're going through might be extremely intense.
Right. And they're not feeling the imminent threat to themselves, which makes it even harder to want to pull the trigger, perhaps.
Perhaps, and particularly where self-respect lives.
Right. And the other issue, it seems, is that they spend so much time with their targets, surveilling them, mm-hmm. you know, following their patterns, that they get to know them, right?
Sure. And here's an interesting question, too. I know from doing different research of different parts and things like that, that the advantage of not pulling the trigger from a drone is if you were to send, you know, our special forces are extremely well trained. They're very good at what they do.
Mm.
If you send them in there, you do risk losing a soldier, but there's a lot of advantages to it, which is that A, you're on the ground, you can tell if you have the wrong house, you can tell if the guy happens to be sleeping with a room full of nuns, or there happens to be a wedding going on. You can tell these things, you can make decisions. You can also get the information. You can also see, oh, wait, actually that is his brother, let's go get him, as opposed to just shooting everybody. And there's a huge advantages to what the special forces are able to do, to letting them do it, from an information point of view.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me, in the film, the screens that you were looking at,
mm-hmm.
those were blue screens, and then you imposed the images later, is that right?
Most of the time, but what I would do is, because I shot a lot of the drone strikes in advance, I could show the cast.
We would know what we were looking at,
yes.
We just couldn't look at it at the same time.
Got it. How did you make the decision to make those images so realistic or so high definition? Because my understanding of what it's like is that it's not as clear, it's grainier. I don't know.
Right, that's because you rely, as I did, on WikiLeaks. And that's gone through so many generations that it's now far more degraded than it ever was when it was originally
mm-hmm.
there. So what I did was I showed former drone pilots what I had shot.
Yeah,
and they said it's not bad. And then I would show, show colleagues, and they'd say, "Oh, it's too real." And I would make what already drone pilots had told me was real less real. Mm-hmm. So I degraded it so it was more plausible for the audience. Believe it or not, and I put in more satellite glitches and more compression.
Sure.
So that was a weird thing.
Speaking of that, the accuracy aspect, how do the people in this program actually talk about it in the day-to-day? I mean, in the film, there's a lot of hand-wringing, there's a lot of talking about what they're doing. Well, is that a kind of conversation that people are having at all?
When I was discussing it with the drone pilots, they would say, yeah, there are these gung-ho characters, like
mm-hmm.
there's a character in the film. And there are others who question. So there, it runs that gamut.
It's just like all people. There's all different types. I mean, my experience with the military people that I'm is they usually handle all this stuff with a tremendous amount of wit. And, you know, it's a question of whether or not, to what extent your understanding of the larger picture is. And a lot of the best soldiers that I have met, they keep their eye on the long-term goals. That's mm-hmm. what they're always looking at. What are our long-term objectives and how we can be working towards long-term solutions? And they're usually generally a lot smarter and a lot wittier than mm-hmm. given credit for.
This is such a challenging film to put in front of the public and Hollywood. I wanted to ask you guys, just to wrap up, about your own battlefield and how do you make a film like this today, given the climate of Hollywood, and you know, the money that's involved, the interest.
When I first told a friend of mine what I wanted to a story I wanted to tell, he said, "Well, you know, that Andrew is going to be financed in euros." And it was financed in euros because it's, you know, it is, we're telling, it is an uncomfortable story we're telling, you mm-hmm. know, and maybe we're too close to it, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. in America.
Do you feel like, Ethan, that this was this is a singular movie given what you see nowadays? And
I think, you know, it's not lost on me that one of the great advantages of living in this country is that we have the freedom to speak our mind and tell stories that are that we want to tell. And I do think that in my experience since September 11th, there's been a kind of climate that there's something wrong with being critical of the government or being critical of the military. And yet if we can't be critical, we can't have a realistic dialogue. We can't have a real dialogue at all. And there was a kind of nationalistic fervor that understandably happened after there, but it's you know, I always feel like our stories as our community represent our consciousness and our health. And just like an individual, you know, our health isn't just in our body, it's in our minds, you know, and the stories that we tell and the freedom with which we can express ideas and the freedom with which we can handle criticism and smile and have a healthy dialogue, that's the only way that we as citizens can get educated and have some kind of intimate understanding of what's going on. So I could imagine, you know, I have family members in the military and I can imagine them thinking that this is overly critical but they're seeing it through the lens of wanting people to love and respect what the military is doing and how hard they're working. Mm-hmm. And obviously we do respect how hard they're doing. It's just also our job to be critical. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not critical, you're not being honest and you're not pushing the ball forward. So I view it kind of like that.
Yeah, it is a really interesting question, what responsibility war movies have to telling the truth, especially about a war that is so new, it is right now.
It's new. It's one thing to say, well, you got to wait for it to be over. But when a war goes on this long, you just got to start. I mean,
Well, one of the questions of the film is it ever going to be over?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my whole adult life, the first Desert Storm, I was 20 years old. It's been my whole adult life. And, you know, I have a son turning 13 and it's thinking, well, so what's this generation's role going to be in this war? You know, mm-hmm. You know, my nieces and nephews, and you start watching this going, so is this going to keep going on? And what would it take for it to stop?
Mm-hmm. Have your children seen it?
Mine, no.
No, I'm kind of too young.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. But they might be living it in the future.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This was a lot of fun. Yeah. Right.
Cool. It is. Thank you. It's a very interesting question. Something happened after 9/11, which is that there used to be movies all the time that were so critical, Oliver Stone, and make big swashbuckling anti-government films.
Alex, that was a very nice interview.
Hey, thanks.
How was Ethan Hawke? Was he cool?
Yeah, he was really friendly. I got to thank him for Boyhood, which I told him I saw with my mom, which was kind of an emotional way of seeing it.
Boyhood was so good.
So good.
It was, yeah. There's a lot of shitty movies out there. I guess like Boyhood reminds you of the quality of the importance of like really good stuff. And like, you know, Good Kill, it's hard to compare. Like,
but Ethan Hawke is still very good in it. And it's an important, nice to see movie.
I was going to say, like, it's weird to see Ethan Hawke playing, after watching Boyhood, playing such a an emotionally pent up character in this movie. He doesn't do a lot of emoting. He doesn't do a lot of talking even. When he does, it's like, it's intense, but it's a very restrained role. And I think, again, it reflects the turmoil that's going on inside these people's heads, which is part of the story, and I think is one that continues to be worth telling. Like, what is going on in the heads of these people who are fighting these wars, and who are dealing with what I think one drone pilot I've read about has called the sort of moral harm that comes from killing people remotely.
We had on a recent Motherboard documentary, Inhumankind, we had a drone analyst who was very bothered by what he had done in his line of work, and has kind of come to grips with it, or coming to grips with it, or whatever, since he's left the military. And he wasn't even flying or dropping weapons on people. He was part of the other like apparatus of that whole machine that is like looking at video feeds and saying like, there's suspicious activity here. Like,
totally. And you know, it's like, you don't really even need to have much military experience to do those jobs. From what I've heard, you know, kids get recruited out of arcades and out of recruitment centers based on their acuity with video games. And their job is not to fire the missile, but maybe to shoot the laser that comes before the missile, or to look at the footage. And so you have a lot of people who are kind of inexperienced and are dealing with what, again, seems virtual, but is actually quite gruesome.
Something that I think is really interesting that's happened as a result, I mean, you see Good Kill here, and you see there's a new play called Grounded starring Anne Hathaway here in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the exact same story, except told from the perspective of like a one woman show. She is a fighter pilot, and then she gets pregnant, and then she's grounded. And then when she can go back to work, she's a drone pilot, and she does horrible, horrible things. And she hates it, and she loses her mind and gets, you know, PTSD and doesn't know what to do with her life, basically. And that's very,
like,
very different. it's very interesting. It came out approximately the same time. And if you are in New York City, I would suggest seeing Grounded, because it's a really good show and it's very quick. It's like 60 minutes or something. And, Anne Hathaway actually puts on a very good performance, and it's really well written.
You say actually like she's not a good actress.
I've heard some people don't like her. I like her.
Have we seen Les Miserables? I mean, come on.
No, actually,
I haven't.
Sorry,
seen
I skipped it. Yeah.
All right. Anyways, the interesting thing I think is that we are now seeing pop culture like Grounded and Good Kill, whereas 1 to 2 years ago we had, you know, The Kroll Show.
Right.
And I don't know if you guys remember this, but a few years ago, there was talk of giving out medals to really good drone pilots.
Sure.
And people freaked the fuck out. Like, no, there was the biggest backlash I've ever seen to, like, an idea to honor people. They basically said, you know, these people aren't war heroes. They are sitting in a trailer in Las Vegas, like, and people who are in active combat, you know, in war zones, said that this is offensive and this shouldn't happen, and they killed the drone medal. They didn't.
Right.
It doesn't exist. And I don't know if we'd have that same. We probably wouldn't have someone proposing it now, because the drone war is very unpopular. But I don't think people laugh when, you know, you see these stories of PTSD and drone pilots anymore. They might not necessarily understand it, but they probably do understand that they are seeing some like really bad things and are being asked to do some things that they may not necessarily want to do.
And they're doing it without any of the valor that used to come with maybe being in that position, which, you know,
right. I mean, they're going home to 7-Eleven and like, you know, drinking at the ball game.
Right.
And that's seen as a very cushy thing by regular Americans, and both Grounded and Good Kill show that it's not easy to go to work for half a day and then come home and act normal.
Did you have other questions about the accuracy of the film? Like, you mentioned that there were some questions that sort of lingered.
So it was the same. It was the same thing as you. It's this video feed is so good, and that's used as a plot point almost. Here's a huge spoiler alert. You should probably stop listening now if you haven't seen the movie, or if you care to see it. But at the end of the film, Ethan Hawke goes,
"Don't do it.
Don't do it."
Do it.
Oh, no, Chris hasn't seen the movie yet.
I haven't
yeah.
seen the movie, but it's fine.
Well, I mean, can I just say, like, a lot of the film centers around the drone pilots becoming acquainted with a particular set of characters on the ground.
Right? Yeah, they Ethan Hawke basically watches the same dude do the same thing every day, and he doesn't like what he's doing. And at the end, Ethan Hawke, like, commandeers a drone by himself and, like, murders this man.
Really?
Yeah. So here's what happens. Ethan Hawke.
How?
Ethan Hawke witnesses. Drone. Yeah.
No, but how? Isn't a drone is like a. I'm sorry, correct me if I'm wrong, but don't drones have to be piloted by at least two people, especially yes. like a strike, because one person has to do the targeting and the ordnance.
I mean, again, the details are a little bit murky, but yeah, my understanding is, yeah, you need a lot of people to fly the drone.
Throughout the film, and like everything I've seen, there's at least three people in the trailer and many more on various like channels of communication, like radio, etc. But in this scene, basically, Ethan Hawke watches a man rape a woman in, like, HD, like, zoomed in, like, watches this happen a couple times. And then, to do his bit of good in the world, he goes and sees this man approaching the woman again, and he hops in the trailer by himself, flies the drone, murders this guy, and then, like, leaves.
How does he murder the man without murdering the woman?
So he sees her, he sees him walking towards, like, the spot, and she's, like, she's there. He's not there yet.
How far away is the guy when he kills him? Does he kill him with a Hellfire missile? Because those things have proven not to be exact.
So I guess there's a lot of questions here about, like, the accuracy and the realistic quality of this movie, right? So I think it does make it hard.
Oh, really?
He hits her too.
Oh, but, that's the big
but deal. But then she kind of lives. She like moves at the
I
end.
I can't believe you're revealing this ending.
That's Jesus. A pretty good ending, actually.
You think?
I mean, it might not be. I don't think it would be easy to hijack a drone like that, but maybe. I don't know. But that's kind of a nice... I like how much of a downer that ending is.
Yeah.
It is a downer, and that's not to say... My problem with it is that Ethan Hawke has had, you know, the chance to learn so much about this man, and like he's seen him in HD for like weeks and months on end, and he like gets to know him basically. And from the drone pilots I spoke to, they say they're flying in completely different places every single day. Like they'll fly for 12 hours one day in Pakistan, and the next day they'll be in Afghanistan, and the next day they'll be in like, you know, Libya and or Yemen. And then back to square one, and they have no idea where they are in any given day. And that's obviously by design, because I don't think the Air Force wants them to know what's going on, or the CIA doesn't want them to know what's going on. And well, he very much does in this case.
I thought if they were following a target, they spent many days with them now. Like if they have to like determine if someone is actually enough of a bad guy to launch a
missile. So that's what happens in Grounded, and I've seen differing things about it. That's what it was told to me by the Global Hawk pilots. Mm-hmm. I would suspect that there's like commanders who are, you know, with the same target day after day after day, but the people who are just pressing the buttons, I would think that they would want to mix that up as best as I can.
Yeah. Another issue of accuracy, Ethan Hawke, who used to be a fighter pilot flying F-16s, talks about at one point in the movie landing on a carrier at night and how those glory days of being a Top Gun are over. But what I don't think checks out is that if you're an Air Force pilot, you don't land on a carrier. That's a Navy pilot. So that was just like a little like piece of accuracy.
Ever?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. If you're landing on a carrier, you're in the Navy.
What was Top Gun? Were they in the Navy?
Yeah, they're in the Navy, man.
Oh, man.
And in a lot of ways, I feel like this movie is echoing, you know, it's echoing Top Gun for this sort of new generation. I don't know if it'll have...
Top Gun wasn't a downer. Top Gun was nothing but good Jerry Bruckheimer times.
I know. We're in a new era. And I think also, you know, Andrew Niccol, who made Gattaca with Ethan Hawke also, is obsessed by these questions of what does technology do to humans? And what do we do with the technology? And I don't think, you know, as with Gattaca, like you've got a technology that has a lot of promise, genetic engineering, but at the end of the day, like it's pretty much a dystopic film.
Yeah, I think that's a good takeaway here. It's the first film that really tries to be accurate and cover those questions with regard to the drone war. And I don't know that it necessarily succeeds, but at least it's not so terribly off that it's worthless as a film and like
it's endeavor. Definitely interesting.
Yeah. So you should definitely see it if you haven't. I hope you're not listening to this though, if you haven't seen it, because then you know how it ends.
You could have fast forwarded, I presume. Yeah.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. In any case, we're going to leave you here. Thank you very much for listening. I am staff writer Jason Kebler, and I'm here with Alex Pasternak.
See you later.
And Chris O'Coin.
Bye-bye.
You can subscribe to us on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/motherboard and iTunes. And please consider supporting Casper Mattresses. It's casper.com. Use code VICE for $50 off any order. We'll see you next week.